Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
What is up, Wizards fans? Welcome to another Believe in Wizards podcast. I'm Matt Moderno. He's Jihadi White. Before we get going here, Jihadi, just checking in. How's things? How's everything? The season is almost over here, mercifully. How are you feeling about NBA basketball so far?
Well, I'm looking forward to the playoffs. I mean, to keep it real, it's still the most exciting part of the season.
Yeah.
You know, especially for, you know, big NBA fans. It's, you know, it's a lot of games to watch during the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes a lot of people don't watch all the games, but this is the time where the NBA fans really, really partake in the rest from here on out for the season, all the way up until the championship game. So this the part you look for.
Anybody, like, I don't know, for you as a former player, like for me, I'll pick a team if the Wizards aren't in it that I'm kind of interested in, or a specific player on a specific team. Are you kind of like following any teams in particular, or are you just, hey, I just want to see good games in general? How do you watch the playoffs, I guess?
I follow the team that I like. Then I follow also the teams that are, you know, that are making an impact and an unexpected impact sometimes. I follow, you know, the team that you always followed since a kid, sure, which is tough because that's the Lakers for me. Yeah. And, you know, it's tough watching them these days.
Sure.
But yeah, I keep up with the game, so I like certain players. I like certain systems and organizations and how they piece together, especially the young teams. Mm-hmm. So like the Pelicans, I like how they're looking right now. So, and that's exciting. I never, so you get, no one's really a Pelican fan unless you live in New Orleans. Yeah. But they're exciting to watch.
No, that makes sense. I'm assuming the Celtics will be interesting. Tatum's a St. Louis guy, oh, so yeah. You got a roof
Celtics,
for him.
Yeah, well, that's the guarantee. The Celtics, you know, looking at the Bucks this year, really look good. Denver, obviously, I'm not a big Denver fan, but I like basketball, and I like good basketball, and it's exciting to watch good basketball.
I think if I've got to adopt some teams for the playoffs here, I'm going to take Minnesota and Oklahoma City. Just kind of like seeing the young guys kind of show up out of nowhere and make some noise that are kind of unexpected. And it's like there's not like a long established bandwagon really with either team. So I don't feel bad kind of jumping on board here for the rest of the
year. Right. Right. You can't get the fair weather.
Exactly.
Pin in your hat that somebody tries to give you, because I mean, like, it's Minnesota and it's OKC, but they're looking good. Yep. They're exciting to watch. And it's new talent.
Yep.
You know, it's like those, it's that young team, that young nucleus that you kind of unexpected to kind of gel, and they're looking really good. No one thought Anthony Edwards would be the Anthony Edwards of the day right now. And so it's just great to just watch him play.
Yep. I found myself selfishly rooting for him in that Wizards game the other night. He was at like 40 points. I was like, let's go, Ant, get the 50. Like, just because he's a fun watch. And
I never admit that.
I know. It's this point in the year. If the Wizards lose, that's a win-win for me for draft purposes here.
Right.
But we'll get into all that here in a little bit. But first, we're brought to you by Stateside Vodka and their Surfside Hard Iced Teas. And we're brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, UFC, tennis, and of course, like the NBA playoffs. That's the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting, your favorite casino and card games, available right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to place your first deposit, 50% off if you use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, on your first deposit. And BetOnline, it's where the game starts. So that time of year, I think the betting companies are really ramping up here with the playoffs, so I'm sure they're excited about that. Jai, let's just jump right into it. The Wizards are 15-65. I kind of posed this a little bit for people on Twitter, but I want to break it into two parts for us discussion-wise here. So just the first thing is just kind of grading the season, like the experience overall, watching the team, did guys get better, that sort of thing. And then we'll do a second part of just how do you think they did kind of kicking off year one of the rebuild? Because to me, those are like kind of two separate pieces of this. So I'll go first here a little bit. My grade for the actual season itself, I've got a C-, just for there were like long stretches at the beginning of the year where like Poole was like nightly on Shaqtin a Fool, and they were still giving them like huge volume. Like Koulibaly was standing in the corner a lot for long stretches of the season. I thought they should have made a coaching move a little earlier in the year. There were a lot of situations where like the veteran guys were still weirdly playing over the young guys past the point in the year where it didn't matter. I'm including all the stuff with like Ted and the potential move to Virginia and like that whole sort of like, you know, Paul had cast over the season. I think that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way from like the experience. You know, the Wizards basically banned a reporter, our guy Neil, for you know, tweeting out a picture of their billboard essentially. So I thought that was just like really poor form. And I know like they kind of sort of be cheerleaders on the broadcast, but it's just like when you're doing a nightly broadcast for a 15 win team and you're talking about them like they're a title contender, like that shit's kind of unwatchable. So just like the overall experience of the season for me was a little underwhelming. And I thought there'd be more, I don't know, more change, and we'd be seeing more of these young guys. And to me, that's been the most exciting part. Like, I loved watching Patrick Baldwin Jr. get 25 minutes the other night, and I thought he was reasonable. You know, trying to guard Gobert and stuff was interesting to see him do. So not a lot of world beaters, but at least it that would have given a little more excitement to the season, I think, if they'd have made that move earlier in the year. So where are you at with the season, and did I say anything crazy there, I guess?
I pretty much give them the same thing, C minus D, D plus, around that area.
Sure.
Differences between you and I, maybe, is I was pre-warned not to have lofty expectations.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? They came in letting us know.
We're going to be bad.
So yeah. Many words. We're going to have a shitty season.
Right.
So now, cool. It's like meeting the girl and she tells you all her red flags right out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They say women should come with a warning sign. This one, they already had the warning sign.
The right? Red flags were up immediately.
Right. So, yeah. So I'm going with what now, you know, I don't have over exceeding expectations. I'm taking the team for what it is. Right. Mm-hmm. So going into that, you know, you say, What was the good and bads? You know, the most impactful move outside of Jordan Poole kind of going through his process, was the us losing Gafford,
and
Bagley, right? So to me, that's if we did anything impactful in any way, better or worse, it was that move, because that's pretty much the only major move we made.
Yeah, it's true.
Other than re-signing Kuzma, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that was a better move.
Sure.
Right. I do like the Bagley's performance, but I also, it's the injury prone where he's not able to ever sustain a season or sustain mm-hmm. even the time he's been here.
Yeah.
Right. So I personally didn't like giving up what Gafford gave us, even though Bagley gave us something else and actually put some consistent points on the board more than Gafford did.
Yeah.
Right. So then if that's the case, now you have to look at what's another major impactful move that we made. And really the only other one outside of that happened last summer
mm-hmm.
in the draft.
It's true.
Now, with Vucevic, but the great thing is now we're just able to see the impact of what that draft is.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's considering what we get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I say, okay, I can now rewind back and I can judge that move at that time
yeah.
of getting that draft. So that raises the level to a C minus, you know, past maybe a D plus or a D. Now that raises C minus because now I could say, oh, we did do some impactful things.
Sure.
Outside of that, the only other move to me was a coaching change.
Yeah.
And the coaching change, I didn't really see a big difference at all. I didn't see, a little more emphasis or attempt of emphasis on defense.
Hmm.
Now, toward the end of the season, I saw more. I don't know if it was because of the coaching change or because of so many injuries
yeah.
to where you had to shift positions.
Yep.
But when I start seeing positions have to be shift because of the lack of players we had and the injuries we had, then I started seeing some places we actually can go.
Yep.
When I start seeing Poole playing point, where mm-hmm. he's forced into a situation to where he has to have poise. He has to make right decisions. He has to be more of a leader. He has to take better shots. He has to get everyone involved. Ah, okay. That's not bad at that situation. We can grow from that.
Yeah, there's something right? there at least. Yeah. More there than I thought early in the year.
Right. So in all of those instances, it's some that I see from an organizational standpoint mm-hmm. that weren't bad, but then some I didn't like as much.
Yeah.
But then some happened just off happenstance of lack of players that really, really brightened it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see what happens with Poole getting shifted to the point, and you bring Vucevic in at that same time, you end up not having a bad feeling about where this team can go in the future.
Been more competitive stretches right. here, I think, the last month, maybe. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a good way to look at the season as a whole. And I think that feeds into sort of like the rebuild convo, too. So at first, I was a little like bummed they didn't get rid of more of the vets at the deadline. So it was sort of like I wanted to see kind of more immediate things. But like, all right, they're playing the long game. They're not going to rush. They're not going to panic this thing. So I'm trying to give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here. I think this is the offseason, you know, where maybe we see a little bit more movement and some of these kind of guys change over. I didn't love the Gafford move, so I was kind of butthurt about that one, honestly. I didn't love how they used some of their two-way contracts, like on guys that will probably never be like meaningful, you know, NBA players. Like they don't have the potential to be more than like the last guy on the roster. So I didn't love that. But the goal this year was be bad and secure a top three pick. And they've done that. So they're basically locked into that, you know, a top four pick, I think seems pretty likely at this point. They've got a 52% chance at finishing in the top four. They're second right now in odds, which would mean the worst they could fall to is sixth. And that's a reasonably slim chance of doing that. So, you know, that was objective number one. So they've accomplished that. So I got them Give him a little credit for that. They gave Denny the new deal. He's established himself as a real piece, so I think that looks good. I think the Kuzma contract is good, whatever people think of him. I like think you said like they've got a real player in Vucevic, and I didn't know that that would be the case, honestly, when I watched him pre-draft. I think Koulibaly, like, overall, kind of an up-and-down season, but they put him in spots where, like, hey, go guard Luka as a rookie, and he didn't embarrass himself. So I feel like that's a win overall. Obviously, would have loved to see him play the last month of basketball here, because I think this would have been the chance to give him the keys a little bit more and give him some increased usage. So overall, I feel like with the rebuild, I'm like a B minus kind of. Like, nothing's like overwhelming so far, but also don't see where they've made like a bad move yet. So it's hard to like grade them too harshly on like year one of this, because I feel like they were in a pretty bad spot. Like, normally these teams, when you get rid of Bradley Beal, you get rid of Kristaps Porzingis, you get a lot of assets back, you know, in the process. They didn't really do that. So they were starting with a pretty bare cupboard, you know, going into this rebuild. And I think they're kind of slowly putting themselves in position to do better things longer term here. So I don't know. Where are you on like the rebuild piece of it so far?
The rebuild aspect, we haven't got as much to see the rebuild aspect.
It's kind of incomplete so far.
With the rebuild aspect, the only thing you can really take is, you know, getting Koulibaly this year.
Mm-hmm.
Got Koulibaly, and then I like the addition of Tyus. Right, and I like the addition of Tyus, and I like how solid he was at the point. I think that was something that really said, okay, that's a solid player, solid point. Maybe not a bad facilitator, not the best, but not turnover prone.
Yep.
Right.
They didn't lose the games. Yeah.
So which means you can stretch him into, hey, let's try to be more of a facilitator, and it'll be okay. Right, because he's the type that can be good at it, and you really don't have to worry. He's more of a game manager. So I didn't like the move of Bagley Gafford. I didn't like the Bagley Gafford move, but I understood it was for the future.
Yeah.
So it's not much to me as far as rebuild process. It's not much to see.
Kind of underwhelming, right?
Not much to see the grade on. So, you know, did you do anything bad? Not really. You know, did you make any bad moves? Maybe a move I disagreed with, but was it bad for the team? I don't know.
Sure.
To me, I like the fact that it was a good player that was growing. And they did right by the player. To me, that represents the organization more than sometimes what they get is like, say, you know what? You did what you did for us right. We'll do right by you, sending you somewhere that's good for you. Most organizations don't do that.
Yeah,
so that's, to me, the first sign of, well, we'll treat the players right.
Yep, that's huge,
either
too.
Coming or going. So that right there raises that grade.
Mm-hmm. And Tommy Shepard did not have a great reputation for that with the Wall stuff and how he kind of moved on. So I think I'm with you. I think rehabbing that image around the league is a good positive.
At the first move.
Yeah.
At the first move, doing that, to me, shows players, okay, I see what they did with Gafford. No matter if it goes bad or good, they're going to send me somewhere where I fit. And do right by it. And that's not going to throw me in a dungeon somewhere and I'm now playing in Charlotte.
Yeah.
You know, nothing against Charlotte, but, you know.
Dallas is the perfect spot for him.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm giving a C only because I don't have enough to go off of to really gauge, make an impactful decision on a grade.
Yeah, that's true. It's sort of incomplete, right? I think maybe we can have this convo at the end of the offseason and we'll know a little bit more, like how some of these pieces move. not moving Tyus Jones at the deadline, knowing he's going to be a free agent this summer, that could look bad if he just leaves and you get nothing for it. I know they didn't like whatever they were offered back, but, you know, maybe 2 second round picks would have been better than nothing if he just decides to walk. So can they sign and trade him to somebody and get something back in the process? That'll be interesting to see. Could they get more than they would have gotten at the deadline by signing and trading? I don't know. So those kinds of things are going to be interesting. What they do with Kuzma from here on out is going to be interesting. Personally, I'm not expecting them to move him this summer, but I could be wrong on that. There could be some other team that's gearing up for a playoff run next year and they want to rebuild. And, you know, he's their veteran guy they want to add. So maybe the price is right. But I also think he's a guy that you don't have to rush to get rid of. The younger guys like him. They largely perform better when he's on the court overall from an offensive ratings perspective and defensive rating. They're just bad anyway. So I don't know that that matters. But it's just one of those things where they've got options with him. So if they get a good deal, they'll take it. And if they don't, they don't have to rush to do it. So we'll see what they do with kind of those pieces. If they can have another really solid draft, I'll feel a lot better about things. Everybody's kind of shitting on this draft overall. Like, you've got scouts and GM saying it's the worst one in a decade, basically. So if they can come out of this, they've got 3 picks. They'll probably be top 3 around 25 or 26. And then a mid, you know, early to mid second round pick. Like, if they can get one real player out of those 3 picks, I'll feel like a lot better about, you know, this, because I'm not going to grade them on, well, they didn't get 3 guys in a weak draft. Like, take some big swings and see if you can get some dudes with upside and, you know, hopefully you kind of add some talent to this roster as you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you don't have to get the most highest drafted player to get a good player, right? Yeah. To me, it's kind of finding that diamond in the rough. Especially for me, is the 4 spot and the 2 spot.
Okay. Right. You don't think they're set at the 4 with Kuzma and like Denny and people like that? Or would you still look for like a burlier big 4?
I think Denny is a really good 3.
Okay. Gotcha.
Kuzma, veteran-wise,
he may not be here long-term anyway. Yeah.
I just think you need a more consistent type of 4 right now. And so we need youth at the 4 spot.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But we need a consistent type of impactful youth at the 4. Mm. Somebody who can really put the ball in the basket.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody really could slash. I think Kuzma is a great player, but his game isn't going to grow to another level beyond where he's playing right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
The potential is kind of tapped there.
And he's just reality, he's not getting any younger.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So to me, I feel like we can get impactful for just like a younger version of impactful Kuzma, but a more modern game, a more of a slasher, more of a mover without the ball. Mm-hmm. More of somebody who can really shoot the 3, that can really spread the floor, and we get a two guy,
okay,
that can really light it up on the outside. What's the problem for us? To me, is we don't have enough of perimeter firepower.
Okay.
So if we can really get some perimeter firepower and still be impactful, it'd be good. So a backup 5 who can rebound, who can really protect the basket. We don't need any, you know, who can get some chip ins.
Right.
We'd be fine because the more of a spread floor team we can be, I think the better we're off we can be.
To me, whoever you add on the perimeter has to be able to go.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Pardon somebody. Just watching Poole the other night, like Nickeil Alexander-Walker is lighting him up. Like every time Poole was on the court, they seemed to hunt him defensively, and that hurt. So if you're committed to playing him, you know, that many minutes, especially as the point guard spot, I would just love to see a two who can like maybe stay in front of somebody. It's just so hard to have like no point of attack defense whatsoever. Like it just, somebody the guy I've liked in the draft is Stephon Castle for UConn, because he's not a great shooter so far, but I think he could be that kind of slashery type guy. He facilitates. I think he can really be an on-ball creator, but he will like instantly be their best perimeter defender, I think. And he's got potential to turn into something more offensively. To me, that's the kind of guy I think I would look for. And he makes sense next to Poole. But I'm with you. Like, you got to have some guys who can put the ball in the basket. I think Kispert's done that for them pretty well here. I would expect him to get more of like an increased role next year. But honestly, they could use somebody at, like, there's no position they can turn down because they've got so much talent at it already, in my opinion. So I'd take whoever the best is they can get that they'll actually play at a position to maximize their talents. Like, if you draft a point guard, but you're not going to play him because you've got Poole, or you're going to shoehorn him into a role he's not suited for because of that, I think that's a little, that's where it gets wonky to me. But, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I get it. And we really do need to put some emphasis individually on defense.
Sure.
But in the end of the day, especially now, yeah, it's a bucket league.
No, I'm with you.
It's a bucket league. Look at Indiana. They don't play no damn defense.
They're also not that good, though. I mean, that's the problem.
Like, but they get buckets.
Yeah, and then they're like, what are they, an 7 or 8 seed?
Yeah, right, yeah. But look.
It caps you a little bit.
Mid-season, how are they looking?
Sure. I mean, their rebuild is going better than ours is so far, for sure. But you got to add a few defensive pieces.
Did they put that much emphasis on defense in their rebuild?
Not yet.
They put it on putting that ball in the basket.
I think the best teams in the league have to guard at least a little bit when you get into the playoffs.
I'm not taking away from it.
Yeah.
And we do need to get much better defensive.
But starting with some buckets is a good place to go.
Hey, we better start with some buckets and some bucket getters.
I feel you. Yeah. I get the point. I think whatever they can get, as long as there's more talent, I would want more shooting. I would want more athleticism. They can't say no to anyone at any position of like, well, we're too good here. Some of the fringe moves, like, okay, you give Eugene Amarui a multiple year deal. It's not much of it is guaranteed. That's fine. The Jared Butler deal, just for anybody who hasn't seen that yet, they signed Jared Butler to a 3-year, $5.8 million deal, which is guaranteed for $1.25 million this season, non-guaranteed for next season, and a team option for the third year. It's a good deal. I think it's probably the best deal Butler was going to get anywhere coming off a two-way, because two-way guys don't typically get crazy deals anyway, but I like him as a piece. So
yeah,
giving yourself the option to keep him longer term as a backup point guard, like, I like those kind of fringe moves. So I'm giving him credit for solid-ish stuff like that so far too.
Yeah, I like that move too. And I like that they got that. I like that they structured the contract that way.
Yeah.
Because it locks him in pretty much. And it's, to me, it's only upside in that situation, especially the Butler we've seen so far.
Right.
So, like, if we can lock them in early and still give ourselves options if things go the other way. Mm-hmm. But right now, he's shown and proven that he can be a solid backup, and he also can be a floor general when needed, and he can shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. Right? So
what's not to like, you know?
Why not make a smart move?
Yeah. And someone like Butler too, it's came from a winning program in college. Like, he's got some, you know, some pedigree there of coming from a place where they prioritized winning, and hopefully some of that, you know, translates and things too. And the other thing with these deals is I think they probably looked at what this last Wizards two front offices did, where sometimes they'd kind of panic to bring guys in and hamstring themselves with some of these deals longer term. The Kuzma deal is descending. Denny's on a budget deal. Butler, you're not committed long term. They didn't give him three guaranteed years just to make sure he signed here. Like, if any of these moves really look bad, you can cut bait on them or move on from them really easily. And I think that's great for a team that in 2-3 years, when you want to be good again, if these guys aren't working out, it won't hurt you. You're not going to have to attach assets to these guys to move on from them. And best case scenario, they all work out and they look great and they're on team friendly deals. So, like, that's the kind of stuff I like. It hasn't been overwhelming, but they're like showing that they get it, I think. And that, you know, that's nice to see.
No, it is. It is. And we didn't see a lot of moves, but we didn't see a lot of haste.
Yeah. Not rushing.
We didn't just take what we can get either. We didn't see a lot of settling.
Yep.
Right. We're like, why didn't he move that guy? Why didn't he move that guy? Why didn't he move Tyus? Why? We didn't settle.
Right.
So I like that they're willing to not just take, give away a treasure for some, you know, a little bit of trash.
Yep.
Right. So they're not just going to accept anything or take anything. Right.
Yep.
So it would probably make the rebuilding process a little bit longer, but also lets you know that we're not going to fold under pressure and start acting just because the pressure is on.
Right. We got some chatter in the chat here, Jody. I want to get your perspective on real quick before we keep going. Just sort of part of the evaluation of the season. I'll send you this afterwards. I actually haven't read the whole article yet, which is why I wasn't going to try to put it on the agenda for today. But since everybody's asking about it, just at a high level, Dasan put it pretty well here in the chat. Would love to hear your all's thoughts on Jordan Poole's comments on Wes. He basically blamed him for his struggles early in the season. So this whole long article about basically the first, you know, how the rebuild year has gone so far. And one of the key takeaways from what I've seen from everybody who've gone through the whole thing, like I said, I haven't finished it yet because it's long, is just that no one in the locker room liked Wes Unseld Jr. They were just totally out. He had totally lost the locker room. And they're all, you know, kumbaya around Brian Keefe so far. A lot of people are wondering what your take on that is, essentially. And just also, like, kind of Jordan Poole coming out and saying, like, a coach used me wrong. I don't really love saying that kind of stuff directly. And it'd be more interesting to get more detail on what they didn't like about him. Was it his mannerisms? Was it his interaction with them? Was it him holding them accountable or not holding them accountable? Like, I don't have enough of the context here, really. But when everyone seems unanimously against a coach in a locker room, is that on the coach at that point, you know, or is that, I don't know, just how do you take that kind of at a high level, I guess?
Well, it is on the coach always.
Mm-hmm.
Can't lose the players. Well, because once you lose the players, you can't get them back.
You're done, yeah.
So it doesn't mean the coach is a bad coach. Doesn't mean the coach don't know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when specific players start disagreeing with the coach and start making it known to other players in the locker room, on the bus rides to the games or to the airport and all that, and then it start becoming that chatter from one or two major players.
Snowballs, right?
It starts to, it gets infectious. It starts to spread. Well, once that starts to spread, you can't do anything. Even if you're not a bad coach, you can't do it, right? Because now everything that's affecting the players' chance to get money or chance to get a better contract is always going to be the coach's fault. Anything, any call a coach makes or anything he draws up that didn't work, the player always think they're going to know better and think that their option was a better way to do it.
Right.
So the coach, only thing the coach can do is everything he does, he has to win. The play he draw, it got to be a good one. The offense he draw, he call out, got to be the right one. Right. Because now it's just because nitpicking with the coach.
Yeah. Every little thing is some, you know,
every
monster
little thing. So now it messes up the personal relationship with the coach and player. So when the coach is trying to tell the player anything, he already heard so much bullshit from everybody else. So that's buzzing around. He doesn't respect what the words are coming out the coach's mouth and already think he knows better or think that, man, I'm going to play my game because whatever he's saying is not going to work.
Right.
But it doesn't always mean it's that way, but that's the way it normally goes.
That's how the players are perceiving it.
I don't like that as much as I don't like any player calling out a coach.
Yeah, I agree.
Behind the scenes, it could be so much stuff going on. It could be the coach and the player having many meetings.
Yep.
Right? It could be all bad. But when you start going to the media, especially when the coach is gone, I mean, Wes is out of there.
Yeah. It's a cheap shot because he can't defend himself with that one.
He's throwing the cheap shot, right?
Yeah.
And how does that help you out? And how does that help Wes out?
It's him trying to save face. It's not my fault I was bad this year. It was his fault. See how I'm better now under the new guy? Like, that's...
He better because he forced in the position where he has to make he has to be better.
Wes didn't make him miss wide open threes. Wes didn't make him hoist shit up with a hand in his face while he looked at the basket. Wes didn't make him fall down trying to post up Drew Holiday.
Right.
Wes didn't make him die on every screen and fall to the ground like he got shotgun in the chest. Like, Wes didn't make him do any of that stuff.
If anything, I bet Wes added some accountability to that shit, called him out on it.
No, I agree. I would think.
Yeah,
so.
He didn't make him do that. So, and when Wes left, he was still doing it.
Right.
Maybe a lesser volume, but he was still doing it. I haven't seen a solid joint. You know, now at the end of the day, Keith did put him on a bench. Right? Did put him on a bench. So you gotta say, all right, Keith, I appreciate you holding some accountability to him.
Also, accountability relies on the front office having your back, too. If you're Brian Keefe, you know they're not going to fire two coaches in a row, and you got to do some drastic stuff to earn the job. Whereas Wes, like, you're walking the tightrope already with a new front office. So if you'd have come in and be like, hey, highest paid player on the team, you're coming off the bench. You're playing with dynamite right there. So it's tricky.
In the end of the day, to me, I didn't see a better Jordan Poole. He had to be forced to be a better player because now he's running point, which now that's a completely different mentality of just gunning. You're forced to now have to be able to call the plays. You're forced forced to now have to direct traffic. You're forced to now have to facilitate one, shoot two. Right? You're forced to now have to guard a different player and be able to play the passing lanes. You see him playing the passing lanes more than he ever had, right? So now the accountability comes tenfold in so many different directions.
That role forces accountability on you. It's not
the role forces it.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't be stupid in that role because if you are,
everyone's
going to look super stupid.
Yeah. There's no one left to blame either, too. Like the West scapegoat.
There wouldn't be anybody left to blame if you messed that role up.
Yep, I'm 100% with you here too. And
so the role pretty much forced more accountability than any other coach has ever had.
There's a lot of good commentary in the chat here. I think a lot of what people are saying is where I'm kind of at with. It's not all on Wes. blaming him for all this shit is totally unfair. The players got to take accountability. But it's a very bad sign when it seems you're universally, people are happier when you're gone as a coach. I mean, like, that just, it could be a better for everybody else kind of thing. And Evan asked in the chat, Wes is still technically around. The key word there is technically. He's got a front office job. I promise you he's not showing up to Monumental headquarters every day of the week, working a 9-to-5 at his desk, you know, on a corner office. It's a ceremonial thing because we can't fire you because you're Wes Unseld Jr. They might ask him to do a little bit of stuff here and there, provide some notes, some scouting. I'm sure he and Brian Keefe still checked in on some things throughout the year too. But it's not like, you know, he's the going to be the team president or anything moving forward. He's a non, it's a ceremonial role more than anything. And I bet he's an assistant coach for some other team next season. This was basically a parachute for him on the way out.
The message just got lost.
Yep.
Because of who the messenger became.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When you stop respecting the mailman, you stop opening the mail.
Right. It's true. That's a good way to look at it. So one of the common themes, it seems like, is the players all said that Wes didn't do a good job for them, kind of clearly laying out their roles and their expectations for, you know, his expectations for them. That I believe, because I feel like we saw a lot of that on the court. And that was also a common theme under Scott Brooks, where the players came in and said, we had to have a players-only meeting a month into a season because no one had that conversation with us. So Brian Keefe seemed to do that with them. And they've talked about the expectations for them in certain roles were made very clear. And if I were an NBA coach, I'd coach at any level. I've coached 12-year-old boys, and we got in the room and we're like, hey, you do this, and this is what we want from you, and no more. We want you to see you, like, I don't know how that isn't the first conversation you're having with the team. And it doesn't set in stone for forever, but hey, for right now, it's a 10-game trial basis. You are sixth man scorer off the bench. You are rebounds and boards and outlet passes and shot blocking. Like, and if you show you can do more, you can do more. So how does a veteran coach like Wes, is that just, is more of the message kind of thing? He was telling them their roles, but it wasn't sinking in, or maybe they didn't want to hear it because they didn't like what the roles were he identified for them. I kind of refuse to believe he didn't pull people aside and say, Jordan, this is what I want from you to start the year. Denny, this is what I want from you to start the year. It just, how does an NBA head coach not do that, I guess?
Well, first,
do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
It's a thin line. At first, they're NBA players.
Sure.
They come in knowing what their type of game and what their role should be. You know, and then you don't want to limit them. They don't want to limit their growth. So you're a player. You know the type of player you are. You know the position I put you in. So you should know what to do in that position. I shouldn't have to tell you, like, micromanage you as a player, right? Now, as far as team scheme goes, this helps us out more in this role.
Right, yeah,
these specific things help us out more.
Agreed.
So maybe West did not do that well.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's also letting a player be a player.
Mm-hmm.
That means I'm not, you made it here. You're supposed to be able to know what you're supposed to offer. Right.
You don't want to totally put them in a box and limit them,
right.
But you got to have some structure, right?
Now, if I'm Keith coming in, before everything goes down, I'm having meetings with specific players.
Yeah.
What do you feel the problems were at the earlier part of the season?
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel was the things that was mostly miscommunicated or you didn't get? Now, if I have three or four or five players come in and tell me the same thing, I'm instantly tapping in on those things that those players, because that means that's what the players feel. So if they say we didn't really know what our roles were,
mm-hmm.
and I'm getting that from at least four or five players, that's going to be specific my main thing when I come in.
Right. Priority number one is to address this with people and clarify.
I'm prioritizing roles and letting people know exactly what they are. But look, we don't mind you shooting. We don't mind you drop. But what we have to have from you out top is rebounding, mm-hmm. is protecting the paint. If you're a wing, we have to get, we want you to shoot when you touch it. Like things like that, you know, defensive roles. You have to show on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fight through. All of those things, like the non-negotiables, have to be said right out top.
Sure.
And though now I understand I do have freedom, but I have to do these specific things no matter what.
I've never been around a basketball player that didn't think they were capable of doing slightly more than whatever their current role they were playing on the team was. So Locked On Law asked in the chat, how can you get to the NBA and not know your role? Well, it's really not that simple, because what you think you should do and you're capable of doing may be very different than what this specific team needs you to do to be most successful. There's a lot of guys that think that LeBron James, if they just got more opportunities, and they're not. And that's not what a team wants them to try to be. So there's a certain amount of give and take of reining guys in, but also finding ways to empower them to do, you know, the right things for your team to win, but also like things that help them. And like you said, you want guys that are, the guys want to play in a way that they can get their points and their stats and make their money. So you've got to find, like, you talked about this with Denny, like, hey, if I get the rebound, I know I can take it myself and facilitate and transition, and now I can get a few more free points. Like, so how do you kind of like set it up for a guy in a way that, you know, makes them want to do the things you need them to do and give you opportunity to build for more later?
Well, it's the order of how the guys are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Not most guys say, I got to expand my game to be able to sustain in this league.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get this guy that I just seen play in Sacramento,
sure.
and I bring him over here, I'm bringing him over here for what I saw, what he did in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that individual that I'm bringing over here, in his mind was like, well, I also now can do this. I also now added this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bringing him over for that.
Yep.
Now, if he shows me he can do that,
sure.
we'll let him do that.
Mm-hmm.
But he better give me what I'm bringing him over for first.
Exactly.
The guy's problem is they're showing you what else they can do first.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I want to show them what I can do first.
You got to build the right
way. Before I can bring the foundational stuff that they brought me over for. So that's what happens. The order flips and they're like, well, so now they don't care about the way the game is expanding, because that's not what we brought you here for. We need these specific things. That's why we brought you over here. That's why we're paying you.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the specifics, guaranteed, and then add on to that, right? I don't need to see the Laurie season salt before I see the meat.
I love that. This reminds me exactly of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in Washington. He came over as a 3-and-D guard. And at some point here, especially when guys went down with injury, he was like, cool, I'm going to get in my bag. I'm going to show everybody I can do everything Bradley Beal can do. And it was like, no, bro, like this is not what we're looking for here. Now, if we want to scale up to that, great. So there was some readjusting. And then now he's back in Denver. And guess what? He's a really valuable guy as a 3-and-D guard again. They're not asking him to cook on the perimeter and you know, show off his bag and stuff like that and ISO score. So it's readjusting back into like what your sweet spot is as a player. And there was just a really good set of quotes from Andre Drummond about this. Like we've talked about on the show before. They asked him pre-draft, you know, who he thought he was, his best NBA comp was. And he said, Kevin Durant. And teams like, And he's even said, like, he killed his own career by thinking he could do more than what he should do. He should have just been the block every shot, get every rebound, run and transition guy. And, you know, he thought he was like, you know, young man Wilt Chamberlain. And that's not what any team saw him as. So understanding that and being self-aware is so huge.
You add one thing. Mm-hmm. Every year.
Yeah, right.
And you only add one thing so you can perfect that one.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is guys are trying to add 3 and 4 things in a year on top of what they, right? So now if I'm coming back with 3 and 4 things,
yeah,
you seem like you distracted off what you really are.
Yeah.
Right? So just come back with a jump shot. That's it. Next year. Add that to everything that we like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right, now we got used to the jump shot. Now it's a normal part of your game, and we all know that.
Yeah.
You know, so now you can maybe want to add a pump fake, you know, jump shot with the pump fake and then go drive downhill.
Yeah.
All right, cool. But the problem is guys trying to add all of that because everybody has a bag these days.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody needs to say, oh, I got to put so many tools in my toolbox.
Yeah.
And before you know it, they're trying to use so many tools. You're like, all right, he's not useful.
Mm-hmm.
We know you can use a screwdriver better than anybody else. Like, we haven't even seen the screwdriver.
Right. We don't need you with the bandsaw yet. You know, like right.
Yeah, you got that. Right.
If folks are watching this on YouTube and they ever see me occasionally look down or off to the side, I'm either tweeting something out about some piece of the show I want people to tune into or making a note about things I want to clip for some part of this episode later. And the seasoning before I see the meat line will absolutely be a clip from this episode of the show. That was awesome.
I was trying to put balls behind it.
I was trying not to laugh as I was writing it down. So that's terrific. Just kind of segueing here a little bit, talking about some of the veterans. We talked a little bit about Kuzma and Jones already and Poole. I guess I don't think there's a world where all three of those guys are back in the same kind of role. I think you probably have to keep Jordan Poole. They probably don't want to play him and Tyus together next year. So I think they're probably going to move on from Tyus in some way, shape, or form. So he's probably out if I had to bet. I think Kuzma probably stays unless they get like a really sweet deal. That's just my perception, though. I don't know. Jahadi, how do you feel about those kind of guys here for next year, at least?
Yeah, I don't see Tyus sticking around, even though I would like him to, because he'd be a good backup.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end of the day, what's the better backup, Tyus or Butler?
Yeah, Tyus is a better player.
Right. So now, to me, I can go, which I don't see Tyus being very happy about playing behind Poole.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't, especially when he understands what type of guard he is.
And he actually outplayed him for a large portion of the year, right, too.
But he's just – but Poole just have more – he has a package that he could score more with the ball.
He's more dynamic.
Right, more dynamic. Yeah. Even though Tyus is a very high field goal scorer himself. But I would love that to be the package.
Yeah.
Now, Butler, though – I don't want to get rid of him because I got a feeling there's a lot more to him. And he can stroke that shot. Mm-hmm. You know, if you step back, he seemed like he's a cerebral thinker. So that's really good too. With Kuzma, he's useful. He's very useful to us now. I feel like he can offer more leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the players like him.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much leadership as far as like push.
Yeah.
Push, motivational push.
Yeah.
The for, that force to get the players better at a unit, I don't know how much he offers in that aspect.
Some guys just like to be likable too. I'm a mentor, big brother, not like the tough on you, push you, big brother.
Yeah, he's a cool big brother.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, cool, nice guy. Yeah. You know, nothing, never force an issue type.
Yeah.
We just need youth. We just need youth in that position more. We need somebody who can get up and down, somebody who could jump high, somebody who can much more active. Mm-hmm. We need youth and scoring.
Yeah.
Kuzma does bring scoring. Mm-hmm. But he can sometimes be inconsistent and forceful to get his numbers.
Yep.
If we can really get a versatile four that's aggressive to get downhill, that's active, that can really run the floor too.
Yeah. A transition weapon, like play finisher.
Transition weapon, exactly. Yeah. So to me, that's what we need.
I like that idea so much more than now that I've had a little bit of time to process it as the episode's gone on here, because Kuzma, I like him as a player. He's not a crazy athlete. Denny, really like him as a player, not a crazy athlete. Eugene Amarui, not a crazy athlete. Anthony Gill, not a crazy athlete. Patrick Beldon Jr., not a crazy athlete. I would love just like one pogo stick, bouncy guy in the forward spot. And like, let's just run. And if they're going to do this pace thing, like, let's really commit to it with some real, real play finishers too. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if we can run the floor and have Vucevic as a trailer.
Yeah, exactly. Spot from.
Knock it down right back. Right. So it's team. It's hard for teams. It's hard to guard running teams, especially because they just blow out. Yeah. You're a blowout team that leaves maybe 20% of the game being played that you had to set up an offense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So think about all the little nuances that you get advantages with just by having a team who can blow out and an athletic team.
So as you're saying that, they've got a top three pick here. If Alex Sarr is on the board, granted, he's probably a five long term, but right now he probably, just because he's kind of skinny and, you know, like, got to build himself up, is probably a four, but he can really run the floor. He's super athletic. He could be a lob threat, but he can also defend the rim and move his feet. He feels like a guy that would be a really good sort of complementary fit next to somebody like Vucevic, because he's going to do, I don't know, their skill sets sort of match up well to me, I think. They can each do the thing the other one kind of really can't do. Like, I don't trust Sarr as a shooter, which could do that. I don't really trust Sarr too much as a passer facilitator yet. I think Tristan can do that for him a little bit more. So that seems like that could be like a fun young front court to try to like let grow together. Yeah. I wouldn't love him typically as a top three pick, but this might be the year where you take a guy because his fit makes sense with what you kind of need. And I don't know, talking about adding defensive players too, if you're not going to beef up the perimeter, having a guy on the back line that can clean up some messes for you and replace some of what you lost with Gafford, I don't think is a bad idea either.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, I'm liking that.
In the end of the day, you want your four to be hard to guard.
Mm-hmm.
You got, not because he's always a great shooter, because he's constantly moving.
Yeah,
he's constantly running that floor. He's constantly active.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
gives you some vertical spacing too.
Yeah, vertical spacing. If we can get a Scottie Pippen type,
I like that too.
Yeah.
Hopefully Coulibaly can be your fridge Scottie Pippen in a couple more years here too. Maybe somebody a little bigger even would be a nice compliment to that too. Just looking at Corey Kispert, this is a guy that's probably going to be due for another big follow-on contract here. He's kind of like in that in-between age from a rebuild perspective. Like, he's young enough, he could stick around. He's also old enough, he could be useful to like a playoff team as a shooter. I really like what he's given them now on this rookie deal. The question is, like, what does the next deal look like? And does it make sense to pay a guy like that? You know, like, I saw somebody tweet about like $15 million a year might be the kind of deal he's looking at. To me, I wouldn't be paying him more than I'm paying Denny. And granted, I get it, Denny's on like a really friendly deal. But to me, you could probably more easily replace, here's my spot up shooter, perimeter scorer who doesn't do much else guy. before I would lock him into like a long-term deal personally. I would trade him maybe now if the value is the highest it's going to get, and then look to replace that with my later pick in this draft. Any thoughts to that? Am I crazy? Would you keep Corey? I don't know. If you could get the right deal for him, would you be willing to kind of consider that at least?
Yeah, I would be. Corey offers scoring. Mm-hmm. Offers buckets when he is in the right field, right? It's not what he offers. It's what he has to grow into that he doesn't give. Mm-hmm. That's really kind of hurts him, right? To me, if I'm Corey Kispert, I'm watching Denny every day.
Yeah.
I'm watching Denny every day and say, okay, what am I bringing that he brings? But what am I not offering?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So to me, Corey this year should have showed improvement in all those other spaces.
Yeah. And he's just kind of improved on the things he was already pretty good at.
Yeah, he just improved on what he's good at.
Yeah.
And so that really hurts him because it's someone that's on a team that can not only does exactly what he does,
mm-hmm.
but brings more of the intangibles outside of that.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the only thing to me that can make Corey, you can take him or leave him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, the problem if you leave him and it's trade him, you are losing some significant scoring.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get some significant scoring back where you get it from, or he has to really grow into the player he can be, or at least try to. We need more effort and more dedication. With defense, in mm-hmm. rebounding, right, in seeing the floor, you know, other just being a spot up shooter and a scorer, in getting downhill better, in running in transition more, right. Mm-hmm. So we get that out of him, and we can grow. He can be a backup daily weapon. I don't see him being a starter daily weapon.
Yeah,
but we need scoring off the bench. He can be a person who can really help us with scoring off the bench if he becomes better in those other aspects of the game.
I'm with you. And I think the deal has to factor that in too. Like I would do the negotiation with him and I would say like, look, this is what guys like Denny are making on this team. This is what guys like Kuzma are making on this team. You're third in the pecking order from that. If you're okay with 3 years, $10 million a year kind of deal, like, okay, let's talk. And then if you're not on the same page,
I would kill him with incentives.
Yeah, there you go. I love that.
I would kill him with incentives.
Mm-hmm.
You need to average this many rebounds, this many deflections, this
certain amount of blocks and steals.
Blocks and steals. This many, you know, whatever. I would kill him with incentives to build the drive of the player we know he can possibly be,
mm-hmm.
but also what we can get out of it.
No, I love that. Steer him in the direction that you need him to go.
It forces him in a direction. Either you're going to take, you're going to go in this direction or not.
Yep.
Right. And then I do team options too, to where if you haven't made it feel like you fulfilled those directions that we have, we take the team option.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that a lot. I think that makes sense for a guy like him too. And I think he wants to, like, it seems like the kind of guy who gets it. It's just, we haven't seen all of it kind of come together yet. And, you know, there's still some chance to do that. All right. Brian Keefe, this is the last one we'll talk about here, and we'll save the other stuff on the rundown for next week. Has he done enough for you to think that he's like the front runner to keep the job next year, at least?
No. I haven't seen that much of a, I don't need a dynamic change, but I gotta see it. I gotta see the difference.
Right.
I gotta know what the difference is from the guy we lost to the guy that got fired to the guy that got hired or the guy that replaced him.
I think he's made some strides with Poole. He's made some strides with Denny. They've definitely given Denny the keys.
I've seen actions.
Yeah.
but I haven't seen
meaningful change. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen things change. Yeah, right. I haven't seen, okay, we won 10% more of our games than we have. I haven't seen we making us that big prominent stops that visual that I can see visually. Mm-hmm. Right. Seems like the players say that they're, you know, more accountable. You know, in the end of the day, have I seen a contrast? I have not.
Yeah. I think they've been better, just not like markedly better. Not enough that I'd be like, yeah, this is the dude. I'd certainly entertain.
Better at what?
I think they've been a lot more locked in defensively as a team over the last like 10, 15 games. They've won more games over the last like 10, 15 games than they did the first three quarters of the season. But it's also the time of year where other teams don't give a shit as much. So how real are some of those results? Like we talked about last week, it's the part of the year where other teams are kind of phoning some of this stuff in, waiting for the playoffs. So the fact that they've won three of their last six or whatever, or three of the last seven, you know, does that really mean all that much? I don't know. I think what they've done with Denny and let him be more assertive offensively, like he's been markedly better individually under Keefe than Wes. I think moving Poole to the bench, it's what you talked about with actions, but I think those are things that at least show he gets it and he's prioritizing the guys that they're going to have to build around. If you're Wes and they tell you...
My question is, three of the last seven, is it because of Keefe? Or is it because of the end of the season? Is it because of so many injuries that we got these new guys that seem like they kind of work better together?
Sure.
You know, it's not – the thing is, I didn't see these moves happen before these guys was on the injury list.
That's fair. I have the same question. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't keep him. I think they will. I think they're going to give him a chance to keep the job for the next year or two of the rebuild. But I wouldn't do it personally, but I do think they've been better under him overall than they were under Wes. Just not that much. They've been less 35 point blowouts. There's been less. We blew a 27 point lead. There's been less of those things, just not less enough that I would want him here personally longer term. I'm not against it. I don't know that it matters a whole lot, but they told Wes Unseld before the year, we want to see our young guys get better. We want to see Koulibaly get better. We want to see Denny get better. And those things didn't really happen under Wes, where I think at least since Keith's taken over, you've seen marked strides from Denny since he took over. So if the objective one for your coach is prioritize development of your key long-term pieces, he's done that better to Wes than Wes, in my opinion. But it's sort of meh, you know, like I'm with you. I'm not like, fuck you, we're playing so hard under Keith. So we can't,
It's not that I'm making it's not a final decision. It's just that I still have to see what else more is there. You got to look at the way the team was transferred over to him, right? Mm-hmm. How much could he make of an impact? Like,
no, I agree.
It would be impossible to just see that now we're winning all the games. Now we're more, that's not what expected, but you know, I think it's still time.
Sure.
It's still time to see, time still will reveal, next year still will reveal, okay, what type of coach we have. It's still, the jury is out that he still may be a really, really great coach.
Yeah.
Just that's not, I'm not taking, it just, I haven't seen, I haven't had enough information to evaluate that yet.
I think that's totally fair. I think they're going to give him an opportunity to show that for another year and a team option kind of deal. That would be my guess. You know, like coaches never get hired and don't have like 4-year deals at a minimum. So maybe there's some like short buyout or something, you know, prove you can earn the job. And then in 2 years, if it hasn't worked, you're gone. But if I were a betting man and I was going to go and bet online and take the odds on who would be the coach next year, I think he's probably the prohibitive favorite unless some, you know, big sexy name becomes available who wants to come here and is good at player development. That'd be my hunch. We'll see if that's the right move or not. I think that'll be
later. It's tough to get these big sexy names.
That's true, especially for a team in this,
especially in the NCAA.
Yeah, that's true too.
Kentucky boy.
How do you feel if you're Mark Pope today and you get that job, but you were like literally option eight? Do you just not care because you're so happy to be the Kentucky coach and you're making $5 million a year? Or
no. I don't even know if you wanted to, you know, the scrutiny and the pressure.
Yeah, that's a big job.
Hey, listen, you don't want to be a coach that they have to struggle up some, struggle up people to rally behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like,
yeah,
right?
Get people hyped about you being the coach.
They have to struggle to, they have to compose, like, fake impose people. Like, look, come on, guys, get on the train.
Yeah.
Like, rah, rah.
Yeah, all the boosters are like, oh, this guy.
Yeah, like that's, at that moment, that's just a back.
It's tough for him, too. He's an alum from maybe one of the most popular Kentucky teams of all time, that Untouchables group under Rick Pitino. So you were a beloved player. You're a captain of that team. Now you come in as a coach. If that shit doesn't work for you and work quickly at a place like Kentucky, you've burned a bridge with your, you know, the place you love real quickly. That's a lot of pressure to me.
I'm trying to figure out the move. The move is, I guess, once you are a head coach at Kentucky, a coach at Kentucky, no matter how bad or good you turned out,
yeah,
you still have Kentucky experience, and now you can go get some other jobs by saying, oh, well, I coached at Kentucky.
That's true.
Right? So that's the only pro that I see in his position. Other than that, you know, it's a tough situation to be in because you're going in a place to have so many crazy expectations. This place is used to winning. They're not going to accept mediocre. They're not going to ride with you for a couple of years. And like, they want instant gratification because they're used to it and they feel like they deserve it. They're entitled to that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And think about how many top coaches turn that job down because of, for that reason alone.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is not the same NCAA as the old. You mm-hmm. got the portal, you have NIL, you have to now work with the boosters, the sponsors, you got to now go find 10 times as many players as you used to. I mean, just the college coaches alone. When I talk to my friends who are college coaches, they're like, I'm on the road now.
More than ever, man.
I'm on the road now all summer. I don't even get to spend time with my family anymore because the portal opens as soon as the season over with. So now we got to look at all these portal kids all the way through. Then live period happens. Now you got to go look at all of these high school kids. Then right out of that, we got to go back to the portal. It's no time off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're not traveling to watch it, you're watching film of guys in the portal from other teams and also trying to recruit your current players into not going into the portal.
They on the road all summer now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's a season start to season, when season end, the season start, they're on the road.
Mm-hmm. For your boys, are college coaches following them around already and stuff? Like, are you seeing the same kind of guy, like guys pop up at their games to keep tabs on them already?
Yeah, but it's different. It's different now because
high school's not the priority.
Mid-majors are now have more of an option than they used to because of the portal. So you're seeing more mid-majors on those big events than you ever would before.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah, I hear from friends that are coaching at the high school prep level.
Every player now has to be a fifth year?
Right. Yeah, a 26-year, a COVID year guy, you know?
No, what's the word for it? When you do your senior year twice.
Like a super senior kind of.
It's something they call, like, now every kid about to do their senior year twice.
Wow.
They're going to do a senior year.
hold pro, back or whatever.
Pre-grad.
Post-grad. Yeah.
So every year now it's going to be a kid. All the kids. Anybody who have your kids in basketball who has any option to go in good, prepare to post-grad.
Yeah. A friend of mine coaches prep school at a high level, and I think it's changed what that looks like for them again. Like, that was sort of, you know, like the JUCOs even, like, that's high school kids have to take it now because there just aren't spots for a lot of them anymore.
Yeah. So now I'm thinking about kids that want to go to those big academy schools or those big prep schools.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can't. It's going to be tough for them because now those schools are going to be full of post-grad.
Yep. The amount of, like, those schools that are popping up out of nowhere, too, or, like, I some of these, like, fly by night, you know, it's a boarding school.
Academies everywhere.
Yeah. Like, I've never heard of half of them. I mean, you got the same 10 that have
now
been
a business.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting. So, all right, partner. I think that's all I got for you here today. Anything you want to close us out with?
Say it again.
Anything you want to close us out with here?
Oh, no. Just looking forward to the playoffs.
We got two Wizards games left. I'm going to put the over under at a half a game. They win of those. So would you take the over or the under between the last two games here?
I'm taking the over.
I'm going to take the over also. I think they'll go 1-1.
So I'm taking the over.
16 wins. That'll be good. We'll talk some more draft stuff here as we get going. By the time we talk next, the season will be officially over. So we'll get into what to do next. All right, everybody, you know the drill. Rate, review, subscribe. If you're watching this online on YouTube, please hit that like button for us. We really appreciate that. Subscribe also. The amount of times people are like, hey, guys, Matt, when's your next episode out? I haven't seen you tweet about it. Well, you can hit a subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts, and it'll show up on your phone for you. So you don't have to wait for the tweet to tell you it's out. So we appreciate everybody that does that. And a positive iTunes review always helps us out, too. So thanks to anybody who's willing to do that. As always, this is Believe in Wizards, represented by betonline.ag, and we will catch you all next time.
Peace.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.